Okay, let's look at exceptions first while we're feeling fresh, and then we'll go back and look at the other stuff.
Fresh.
That's right.
Mrs. Gross, I got some questions on this week's assignment.
Oh, okay. Well, we can do those first then.
10 minutes, yeah.
Okay, what am I supposed to do?
Okay, I see there's three parts there, and basically I understand what you're saying, but I wanted to know, when you say display, are you basically saying you just want to see the output, like in a output line?
Yeah.
Display. Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing, you don't want to write anything out, do any kind of updates or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No. Displaying is my word for showing it on the screen.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That was it?
That was it, yep.
Oh, okay.
Just want to make sure I was following the right path.
Okay, we are going down and looking at exceptions, and then we'll go back and fill in some of the stuff I left out. And clearly some of the stuff I left out I don't think is all that important, so I keep kind of pushing it aside. Okay, there are basically three ways to handle exceptions. And if you remember back, actually, on one of the first things, introduction, when I said, and I never clicked on the little thing to click to take a picture. There we go. I said there was a declare, a begin, exception, and end. An exception is optional, as is declare. And we never really did anything with exception. I said I'd come back to it, and that's what we're going to do. So there's exception. So now if we come down to exceptions, introduction to exceptions. Okay. PLSQL allows the programmer to build in an exception handler to deal with exceptions that occur within the block. Exceptions may be either Oracle errors that happen automatically or where the programmer raises an exception explicitly through the use of the raise. So there are three types in the bottom of that paragraph. The three types of exceptions are predefined Oracle errors that Oracle handles implicitly. Oracle errors that are not predefined that can be declared in the block and handled implicitly. And user-defined errors that should be declared and handled explicitly by the programmer. And then you can read all the rest of that. But for now, we're going to look at the examples because I think they make more sense than doing a lot of reading. Okay, so in this one, I picked some exceptions that I thought were going to possibly happen. And there are words for these. Okay, and up above, I listed a bunch of the words. But notice I've got under exception when too many rows and when no data found. And up here I listed some of the predefined Oracle errors are cursor already open, duplicate value on index, invalid, etc. So those are some of the ones that Oracle has words for. And if you go look up predefined Oracle errors, you can find more. So I picked two of those, and they were the too many rows, and they were the when no data found. And I decided that those errors in particular, I wanted specific error messages on. And then the last one is when others, which basically lets you put in some kind of wording that says something else happened. Okay? So I started out here and I have the table that you see below. And I said I wanted an ID greater than 7777. And so if you look at these, there's no ID that's going to be greater than all those sevens. And so I end up taking the when no data found exception. Okay? And I just put in DBMSs on these. But you can do other things in this error. If you wanted to write something to a file, you could write it to a file and make a file of error lists or something. I just used the DBMS because it was quick and easy. Okay, so I said, write out not a valid ID, and you can see down here that when I ran this, it came back with not a valid ID number. Okay, so it's coming back with the error words that I want to use, as opposed to default things. And then I went in on the next one. I said, okay, I want to see everything that is less than 777. And this time it came back and said multiple rows meet criteria. Okay, because I can't have multiple rows because I haven't set up a cursor. So I just did a single select. ID less than 7777 was all of them. And so it came back and said multiple rows meet the criteria, because that's the error that I set up for when too many rows. Okay, so those are using Oracle predefined and picking the words that are unpredefined. Okay, so that's one way of doing errors. And let's see if we type in Oracle predefined. Those are the keywords. Okay, and let's see, Oracle predefined exception list. That sounds like a good idea. Oh, that was just asking a question. Is there a URL? Well, there's a list right there of some of them at least. Okay. And those are some of the ones that I put up there. So you can go basically and find some more if you want to go and look, and I probably, if you hunt around in here, you'll probably find better locations than what I just found. Okay, then, so that's the first way. Number two way, is coming up eventually. Okay. In this example, I'm trapping a non-predefined error. The data shown above is the data used in this example. Okay, so I should basically put that up. The error that I'm trapping is an attempt to add a row to the order line file that contains an order number that doesn't appear on the order header file. There's a foreign key link that makes this illegal. The error from Oracle is shown below. The code that I wrote to deal with this error is also shown. Notice I first defined a name for the exception, then used pragma exception init and gave an error number, and then I dealt with the exception. Okay, so actually I'm going to go back for a minute and take a picture of this because I don't think I did it. And I will sort it out when I go home. Because I don't think I took those pictures. Okay, so what I did there is I came down and I looked up an Oracle error. And one of the Oracle errors is 2291. And 2291 means parent key not found. Okay, so if you get the 2291 error and you go look it up. Okay, so if I go in and look up Oracle 2291, it will give me information on that count, on that. Okay. It'll give me information about that error. So I can go when I get an Oracle error and look it up. And that's what I did. I picked one that I'd gotten in the past, and I went and looked it up. And so that is the 2291 era, and then I decided to include that. So I said, okay, first I've got to make a name for it, and I called it E, invalid order number exception. That's the kind of exception it is. And for this one, you write in there next, pragma exception inish, and then you put in the name, comma, and the 2291. Negative 2291 is the way it writes, actually. So I put that in there, and then I went down to the exceptions and said, when that error occurs. So this is the name of the exception. Now down here I'm saying, when that error occurs, I want to write out foreign key problem, no order number on orders. So I'm telling it that the order number does not exist on orders. So I'm giving a more specific error message than Oracle would give, because it wouldn't give me the names of the files and the names of the fields and all that sort of stuff. So I'm giving a more specific error than Oracle would have.
So then the user doesn't get that error that's above there with the ORA-2291 and all that stuff from Oracle.
They get my error. Okay. And then so they're getting my error coming up. Okay, so which I said was, so I ran that and I hard coded in, as opposed to taking user input. But I hard coded in the order number and the order number and the order line and that order number does not appear. Okay, so it flagged that error. That's not a legitimate order. If you look up above, the orders go up through 000001 through 000004. So when I put in 1234, that clearly wasn't the right order number. Okay? So it comes back and says the message that I said, foreign key problem, no order number on orders. Okay, so some of them, they already have the words put together, and you can just look for the words, like we did in the first example. Others, we're looking for the order number. The error number. We're looking for the error number. And so if you know what the error number is that you anticipate may happen, and again, this is, you have to have some knowledge before you go into this. Although we'll still catch all the other errors. But you've got to have some knowledge going into this, and then you pick the ones that you think are going to happen, and you can write them out. And then the third one, and we'll get into how you can get actually the error numbers and everything in the third one. The third one is where you are writing a predefined error. Okay, so I am trapping an error that I consider an error, but Oracle doesn't. My error that I'm trapping is if B number order is greater than 200. Okay, I don't want anything coming in that has that field greater than 200. So up at the top, under the declares, I make up a name for that error. And I called it E num order over 200 exception. So I made up the name for it. And then down in the begin, I said, okay, if the number order is greater than 200, then raise that error. Okay, make that error happen. Raise that error. And then when I go down and look at what will happen when I raise it, it will go to the when E number order over 200, because that's the error I raised, and it will put out the message that says number order exceed 200, user range error. And so I can put out, this one is really handy. I find this one more handy than the others because, frankly, if Oracle gives me its usual error message that it gives, I can go and look it up. So it's not saving me a lot, but I think this one is a good thing to add to the arsenal of making sure that you have accurate data. So if I wanted to check four different fields, I could have four different error messages that I could raise, and I could be putting out error messages for all the things I wanted, so it's kind of a way of editing your data. So I think this one is a really nice thing to have because it lets me, as I said, do my editing of my data. And then the last one is a variation on that one, but I said, okay, I also, when it's other, I want to get more explicit. So I still have what I did going on, but I've changed the other. And so other is now going to have the error code, and SQL code gets me that, and the error message, and SQL message gets me that, or SQL error, M, error message. And so I'm writing out undefined error, concatenated with change to character, the error code, because I want all same types in this concatenation. Concatenate that with a space, and concatenate that with the message. So down below, you can see undefined error, 2291, integrity constraint, violated parent key, not found. So I put out, that's all the error message. Okay, that's the error message that would have gone out. So undefined error is my addition, and then in addition, I put out Oracle's code and Oracle's message. So if I ever want to see those, I can just grab them. And I could have grabbed them up above, in some of the things up above, too, if I thought for some reason I wanted to do it. This is probably a good way to do the when other, in that if another error occurs, I'm showing the code rather than just saying undefined. So that is a good way of doing the when others. So that just gives me three things that I can do in the exception. One of them is using the predefined names for the errors. One of them is using the error code. And one of them is setting up my own errors. Questions? Questions?
Can we just have a minute to look at that?
Sure.
Okay.
I have a question that's probably stupid, but the V error message, is that also Oracle's message for that specific code?
That's my other.
Okay.
And what did I put in there?
SQL-ERRM, is that coming?
That comes with Oracle.
That comes from Oracle. Just SQL code.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
ERR is error message, I think, is what it stands for.
So I was just trying to figure out which part, parent key not found, is that the error message that goes to that part?
No, if you look down below, undefined error is my message.
Oh, yeah.
Then I'm concatenating that with the error code, which is Oracle 2291. And then, or actually it's hyphen 2291.
Yeah.
And then I'm concatenate that with some spaces, and then I concatenate it with the message, which was Oracle 2291, integrity constraint, parent key not found.
Oh, okay. That's what I was trying to. Because I knew the Oracle code was the Oracle 2291 thing, but the integrity constraint, I didn't know if that whole part was part of the V error message. That was your, I mean, I know it's your own, but I was
No, it's just I've combined them, my own, with the official error code and with the official error message. And in fact, you don't really need to have the error code because, as you can see, the error code comes out as part of the message anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really didn't have to put that in, but I was trying to show you that you could get both of them.
If this was in a loop where people were inputting stuff, would the error make it drop out of the loop, or would you keep going?
No, it keeps going.
Yeah. And if you didn't control it with the exceptions, then would it drop out?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Or actually, that depends on message.
Okay,
that depends on...
The two-car function, is that...
That's just
committed.
Oracle gets funny sometimes about concatenating a bunch of stuff together and wants the same type. And so if you convert, that's a number. And if you convert it to character, then you're guaranteed it's going to work. It gets, as every language does, there's a certain amount of when you concatenate that they periodically will decide that this is not, they want the same types. And I don't know whether I got an error message on this or whether I just tend to, when I concatenate, try to get them all in the same type. It's the safe way to go. Sometimes you can get away with it, sometimes not. But it's the safe way to go is concatenate all of the same type.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if that wasn't there, would you just get the 2291?
No, you get everything.
You still get everything?
You still get everything if it lets you do it.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of if the concatenation will cause a problem.
Did you have to set those SQL code and SQL error message into your own variables to be able to print them out? Or could you?
That's a good question. Could I just put out SQL code?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a question.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. If you have the table, you can try it. If you have the order table, what do we need? Order line? I don't think I have it, but if you have an order line typo, you can try it. Or you could try it with something else. I tend to do that, and that's why I'm not sure that I actually ever tried it. I tend to take and put things into variables a lot. So I'm not sure I have even tried that. Okay. Now, where we are is I want to go all the way back to introduction and just run through a few things that they had that we didn't do much about. We looked at the first things, which was the edit and then run the code. Okay, this is the one I want to get down to, the one that sets up a variable. I can actually set up the variable at the SQL prompt. I'm not real clear why I'd want to do that, and that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of coming back and doing, putting these things up. About a third of the way down, it looks like, on my scroll. Yes. And about a third of the way down, I went through about the top third. And it says SQL variable. That's what you're looking for.
Okay, got it.
Got it? Okay. It's about a third of the way down in the introductory one. So I set up a variable there. And then I said, okay, go and edit. Now, first of all, I think I'd want to set up the variable in the script anyway, because if I have a script that I'm going to run that's dependent on me having set up a variable, it's going to crash every time I run it because I'm going to forget. So that's why I don't think this is something that is a terribly wonderful thing, but that's it's doable, and you should at least know that it's doable. So I set up a variable dmessage varchar225, and then I said, okay, edit, and I went to do a script. And my script has got V message, but notice because I am bringing it in from a variable defined outside, I have colon V message. Okay, because I declared V message externally, so therefore, when I go to use it, I have to tell it that it was externally declared, and the way I do that is colon. Okay? And again, I'm pointing this out because it's there, but I'm not real clear why I'd want to do that. And then I came back and I said, now print out V message. So V message started with no value. I went into and wrote some PLSQL code that put this PLSQL still works into V message. Then I did a start, which is an alternative to using the at sign. I always use the at sign, but you can use start, and I think you can use run. So I said start, and it ran it, and said it successfully completed it. And then I said print V message. So I went back and asked it to print V message, and it printed out what was in V message. Okay. Then on the next example down, I took and moved both of those things, the declaring of the variable and the print, inside the script, but not inside the PLSQL. So I still define the variable external from the PLSQL code, so I'm still using the code. It wasn't defined at the SQL prompt, but it was defined before the begin and before a declare, if I'd had a declare. And so it's still considered external, and the print V message is in there after I've ended everything. And so it's like those two things were typed at the SQL prompt. They are not part of the PLSQL, but they're part of the script. Okay. And to me, that's a better way of doing it. If I want to do the external stuff, it's a better way of doing it because at least it's part of the script, so I'm not going to forget about it. Okay, so when I run the script, it does the declare and the variable, and it also does the print of the content. Okay. Which is not part of PLSQL. Then I also included single line and multiple line comments. Hyphen, hyphen lets you put in a single line comment. And comments drive me crazy. I do not understand why there couldn't have been a universal way to do comments. But ask me how you do comments in anything, and I will say, I don't know. I've got to look it up because I just don't remember what, you know, Visual Basic lets you do an apostrophe for a single line comment. This lets you do hyphen, hyphen. Something else lets you have an asterisk or something. A slash, a pound, whatever. I mean, there's just, I mean, there's just, there's a whole load of ways of doing
it.
And so I just don't even bother to try to remember. If I want to put in a comment, I go look it up and figure out what it's supposed to be. Okay, so the comment here, a single line comment, is a hyphen hyphen, and a multiple line comment is the slash asterisk ended with an asterisk slash. Okay, so if you want to put in a multiple comment. I mean, this is a, is that in
C++
too?
No, we use slash slash.
For the double, for the big ones,
you
use that like that. I mean, this is a good way.
Slash
beginning of five lines in a row.
Right.
Instead of doing the multiple.
Yeah, no, that's the other thing I do, is I do the // on five lines in a row,
yeah.
Because I never can remember the multiple, and I have a big chance of remembering the
but
one.
Seriously, two different commenting characters for, two different types of commenting?
Of course.
It's so ridiculous.
So, I mean, this is a good way to document. And even though I don't make you document, I know Igor does, so we take care of documenting with him. You should document when you go out in the world. I mean, you really, really should document. And if you are taking out samples to show, I would go back, if you haven't documented them, and document them so that you're showing the sample with documentation. Because that really is a good way to keep track. Now, the problem with documentation is that people tend to fix the program and not fix the documentation, which means you read the documentation and it's not accurate with what's doing in the program. So I think putting the documentation internally in the script or in the program, maybe you stand a better chance of somebody correcting it than you do when they have to go to a separate source to find the documentation. So it's good to put the documentation in the program. But again, my biggest problem with documentation, and I've done that a lot when I've worked with people out on the outside, is you go in and they ask you to fix something and you read the documentation and it was never changed since the program was originally written. And any resemblance between what's happening now and what the documentation says is strictly coincidental. So that's my, I think documentation is a wonderful thing, but I think it ought to be done right. And it frequently isn't. Okay, now that's just the using the DBMS, which we've been doing anyway. And you have to set server output on and set server output off if you're going to be using that. And then this one shows taking in some input, but again, we covered all that in the other examples. Nested blocks. Okay, that's the thing I want to look at next, is this nested blocks. You can have a nested block, a block within a block. And we're going to be starting to look at procedures and functions on Tuesday. And you'll see how this works with procedures and functions. And that's the main way that I think it's done. But here I have a nested block, a block within a block. And again, usually that's done with procedures or functions. So I've started out and I've said, okay, on my outer block, I have something called vFirst, which is 212, vMessage, which tells me I'm in the outer, and then I said I'm going to have an outMessage and an outAnswer. Okay? So then I went in and I said, okay, in the begin, I'm going to assign vMessage to outMessage, and I'm going to type v first, multiply it by 2, and assign it to outAnswer. And then just so that you can see what's happening, I am writing out this stuff. Now, in this one particular one, I concatenated without doing the 2-character, and it got away with it just fine. Because I'm putting out a number there and it worked just fine and it put out the number. But if you ever run into problems, and I have run into problems, where it just decides it's not going to concatenate, the 2-character converts something over to string type and then it all has the same types. Okay, but it's funny how, because I noticed that last night when I was doing that, that's a good example of where it works all right. So I've now got put out V first, concatenated with V message, concatenated without message, concatenated without answer, and that's all the stuff that's coming out. Okay? So then I said, all right, now I want to declare, and I'm now declaring a local number. Okay, the one on the outside is the public one. This is the local one. So I'm declaring V first now at 555. I'm declaring V message now as inner define. And I'm I'm doing in message and in answer. So when I come down here and sign V message to in message, it is going to have inner define. And when I take V first and multiply it by 2, I'm getting 100 or 1,110. I can do that. Okay, it's 1,110. And then I said, okay, now put out the inner loop showing, and it goes out and shows the 555, inner, and the 110. Okay. And then I go back out, because I end the inner loop, and I go back out, and I say, show me first V first and V message, and it's back to showing me the 212. And then I say, show me out message and out answer, and it's back to showing me that. And then if I note that when I try to show the inner definitions here, it crashes. Okay, so outside can't see what happened inside. So if I tried to put out in message and in answer, it doesn't see it. So it's local versus public. Okay, when I put it local, it is local to that inner one, and I can only use those things in the inner one. When I go back out, it's choosing the things that are declared outside.
So it's really like they're totally separate variables.
Yes.
Even though they have the same name. The
yes.
The first.
Yes. And in fact, I purposely gave them the same name just so you could see that.
Wow.
Okay. And I think this will make more sense when we look at it with procedures and functions, because that's the practical way that people tend to do it. But if you want to have an inner loop, you can. I think I've almost always seen it done with a procedure or a function. But if you have a loop within a loop, the inner one is this almost, as you said, almost separate. And then there is another example on the next page of it, but it really does basically the same thing. If you look at more examples, this one has more examples of that, and they really are doing just about the same thing, so I'm not going to spend time going over those. You can take a look at them. But they really are, when I looked at them the other night, they really are very, very similar. So, we went last time from about a third of the way through the introduction down to the if statements, and then we progressed along okay. And then the thing that we kind of skipped is record and table types. So that's what I want to look at next, is record and table types. Record and table are user-defined composite types that can be defined by the program. The record type allows the definition of a type that consists of specified fields. Once the type has been defined, you can then define a specific name, etc., and we'll look at that in a minute. And then a table is, we'll see in a minute, is like an array, but it's not exactly an array. And we have seen that. We've played around with tables in one of the cursor examples. So here I said, accept ID number prompt, please enter the identification number. And when I run it, I get a ID number. Then I said, okay, type record donor is record. Okay. And so I have said, type record donor is record. This is a particular kind of record. And it's made up of a record ID, which is 5 characters, a record name that's 15, and a record year goal that's a number. Okay. Then I say a variable of the defined type, or an individual record, or whatever you want to call it. A rec donor is of the type rec donor. So rec donor is kind of the definition, and a rec donor is what I'm going to use. Because if you come down here and you say, take in the ID, the name, and the year goal, you're saying put it into a rec donor. So you're putting it into the specific name there. And we did that with table, too. When you set up a, it's kind of like the big picture versus the individual. When you're talking about an individual record, we're talking about a rec donor, and I think of it at least that way, and I think of rec donor as more of the definition. So I said, select ID number, name your goal into a rec donor dot record ID, a rec donor dot record name, a rec donor dot record year goal from new donor, where the ID which came in on the table, which I'm looking at on the table, is equal to the dollar sign in ID that came in with the accept. And then I say insert into some donor, and I insert those in, and then I can write it out.
Some donor?
Some donor is the name of, I made a
table?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I made another table. There it is down there. Then it just has ID, name, and year goal. So what I think I basically meant was it's some of the donor table. But whenever I'm doing things that involve inserts and updates, I don't like to play with my original data. So I make a copy that has some kind of a name. And this particular one, I actually want it to be blank because I'm putting stuff into it. So I went in and I typed in 23456, which got me Susan Ash. And now I'm taking and writing out the ID number. I'm writing out the record. And the record I defined as having those 3 fields. So I'm writing out the contents of the record. You know, you see this and you should understand that it's acceptable and that it works. I'm not real sure that I think it's necessary very often. I think that the way we've been defining stuff works just fine. But this is an alternative, and so there's the alternative. It almost seems like more aggravation because I've got to put the name of it in front of all the field names, and I'm not real sure. I think that it's a wonderful thing, but I'm sure there are advocates out there that would not even consider doing it any other way.
So you still have to create a table. It's nothing. At first I thought it was like you were creating a table on the fly.
No, it's just I'm defining the record as opposed to having the fields go up there as individuals. So it does at least give me the fact that this is going to be part of what's going to be a record. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's its value, is that it makes it clear that I have a record that's going to be made up of those 3 mm-hmm. things, as opposed to those 3 things just being variables that I end up putting together. When you do the select into, you can just select into Arecadona. But when you do the insert, you have to give the names of the specific fields. Okay. And another thing is you can have a row type. So on this one, I've declared vDonor as having the row type of some donor. So this means, you know how we've used type to tell the name of the type of a field? Row type tells the entire, for all the fields. Okay, so vDonor is going to be the row type of some donor, which means it's going to have those three fields in it. Okay. And again, if you do that, you can select into vDonor, but when you actually use the values, you've got to be specific and give the names. And the names are the names that are on the table in that case, because I've said it is of the row type, and so the names I use are the table names. Because I haven't declared any names up there, so it uses the table names. Again, the word table, I'm now referring to some donor, which is a table on a database, as opposed to what we're going to be talking about in a minute, which is a table that's like an array. Okay, so table is one of those lovely words that has multiple meanings, which is probably why, as I said, when I started programming, we called tables that were part of a database. Actually, when I started programming, we didn't have a database. We had files. But tables that were part of a database were called files. And arrays were called tables. Okay? And so basically what they've done in Oracle is they've taken the new name for files and the old name for arrays. Only it's not exactly an array, so therefore it's whatever. Anyway, when you use the word table in Oracle, it has a little bit of confusion. And speaking of the devil, there's the table. Okay. The table, you have an index by binary integer, which means that it sets it up so it has its own behind-the-scenes way of going after it. And it makes the point that, and I think this is actually a good explanation of that. Think of PLSQ table as similar to a database table that contains two columns. The first column is the key or primary key column and would be type binary, and the second column would have the value that contains the data we're putting in the table. So it kind of, the index by binary is a way that it sets up and keeps track of what you're putting in the table and then can go and access it. So, you know, if you create a table and you say, I want to index and get the fourth thing, it's modified by four. Well, it's keeping track of it in the background on this. Okay. So that's why it sets up the index by, and it sets up its own index. So I have two tables here. And I gave them special names. And then I said the type. And I set up a third table for no particularly good reason except that I used row type on that one. My mouse is got caught someplace.
So whatever is a...
is the name of whatever, yes. I apparently was not feeling terribly creative there, so whatever is some kind of a table. So, I mean, what some kind of a table as in a file.
Right.
Yes. So, basically, if I put something in, I can put something in the table by saying, okay, snow shovel goes into V first, defined by one. Prowl will go into the eighth slot. Sprinkler will go into the fourth slot. And I'm assigning a bunch of things. And the table would now have those keys and values in them.
Where it says whatever dot first, you can substitute, like, say, donor dot,
right.
ID number.
Yeah,
so
oh, yeah, yeah.
One thing I had a question on, we looked at it when we did the manager IDs. Can you put multiple values, I mean, multiple fields or elements into one table, like manager ID and, say, salary or something else?
What I've always done is put them into corresponding tables, parallel tables,
right.
When I've done that. If I want to take them in from a file, you can also put them in as one field and then extract. That's actually a good point. I think I have example of that at home, and I will try to remember to bring that in Tuesday. Send me an email and nag me,
okay.
And I'll try to remember to bring that in, because I think I have one of those at home, and that's a good point to go over. That would be good, something good to see. Okay, so you can do a count to count the number of rows in the table. You can delete rows, you can check and see if something exists, you can go to the first, you can go to the last, you can go to the next, you can go to the prior. So you can basically jump all around in the table. Okay. So that gives you the option to do that, to jump around. And there's examples down below where I check to see if something exists. So I said, if V table variable exists, V number. Yeah.
Okay, so you inserted some things into these different tables.
Yep.
Probably on V first and V second model. Or did I go down?
I put some things into these tables, and then I just showed them, and now I've got a couple of programs down below.
And you showed them. So you put some things in, like, key 12, value Rhode Island, in third table. Are there then, if you looked at that V third, are there things in the earlier slots in the table?
Maybe, maybe not. Depends on whether I put anything in.
So you can just put something, you can say which index to put it into.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to, like, there might not be any indexes before that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Actually, that in answer to your question, that whatever row type was a partial, this is a partial answer of how you can have the thing, as I said, separate and then break it up.
Mm-hmm.
This is third modified by 12. The city specifically is Rhode Island. So row type had on it, whatever row type had, let's say it had addresses. So it could be Adam, street, city, state, or whatever. And so dot city is Rhode Island. So that's one of the examples that you can have. So if you use row type there, then row type is getting a particular row. And I think that may be the example that I have, but I also think I have a parallel one. So I will go and look. So then you come down and you can do, as I said, exists, so they're checking to see if the row exists with a particular VNUM. Okay, so I'm taking in a number and seeing if anything exists in that number. And then I've got a whole bunch of ones down here where I went to the first, I went to the next, I went to the prior, and I basically jumped all around. So you can basically see it jumping around. And then I did another one. So I set up a bunch of things, and I said in the fifth one put the fifth week, and the second put second week, and so forth. And then I jumped around in on the table. Okay. And came up with the first record is 2, the next record is 6, because I wrote out as I was jumping around. Okay, so I put in, and I deleted one of them, so I deleted the 5 one. And so then I had only left, so I had count, and then I deleted, and then I moved around by going to first and next and count. And these aren't terribly great examples because they don't have a lot of substance to them. They're just showing you that these things exist. Okay. And I said in here, when using tables in Oracle, it's a good idea to use count as I did, simply because of the sign of, so the table is unconstrained, the point that you made. So you might think if you just put something into 12, there's 12 things, right. And count will tell you how many things are actually there, how many of the numbers you actually used.
So it seems actually more like an ID number or something than an index. I don't know.
Well, it's an index in that it's got the spot, and if I say I go back and get the 12, then we'll get the 12.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean...
It's weird.
Yes, and not, I don't think, terribly useful, because on the whole, the way you handle tables tends to make more sense to me in other things, but that's all right.
So if you set something to the 12th, like V3rd, to the 12th element, does that automatically mean that when you do the dot count, that's going to be 12?
No.
It's not?
No, and you can see that on the example up here above, mm-hmm. I have put in 4 things. So when I did a count, it came back and said the count is 4. Okay, now I have put them into 5, 2, 12, and 6. So I hadn't even done them in order. Mm-hmm. I put them into 5, 2, 12, and 6. I came back and said the count is 4. And then I deleted 1. And then I did some other stuff, and then I put out a count, and since I deleted 1, it was 3. Mm-hmm. You know, so
in the past, when we did loops, we count would always match because we were just
acting
from the beginning.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not terribly practical, but anyway. So that is that. And actually, we're pretty much done. We're going to start with procedures next time. And I'm not real sure. Yeah, let's just get out early today. Because I'm not real sure I want to just start procedures. I think it would be better to just do a day of procedures and functions, which we'll do next Tuesday. So, you get an early out today. Because I don't think I'm going to get far enough in. I think it makes more sense to tie it all together. So, as I said, we'll look at procedures and functions. And then when you come back, we'll look at triggers. If you look at the weeks we have left, we have Tuesday of next week, so we'll do that. Then the next month is basically December, and we'll do... Yeah, we're going to be fine. So we will do functions and procedures that week, and I think that will finish it, in which case you actually will get 3 class days of lab. If we don't, we will go over into the 8th and do something if I haven't finished everything, but you'll still have the 9th and the 15th off. As in, there won't be classes. And I will post the final so that you have that. And you can start working on the final, getting caught up. But the last two classes will definitely be labs. And it may be that the last three classes will be labs.
What's
we'll see how I go.
Class?
Huh? 16th, I believe. So in, for us, it's the 15th, I believe.
And then the final then is due probably...
Well, the final will be... I mean, basically, they will either decide that the final is the 17th or the 24th.
Okay. Well,
and I don't know which one they're going to decide on. No, wait a minute. Thursday doesn't...